program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, couple minutes in, and coming up, Todd Mostoller will join us. Presque Isle today opens up, and we also got to look forward this week to Canterbury Park getting going. And we'll check in with Andrew Offerman and start to fold in the Canterbury season upon us. You know it's summer. Also, because we tried on Friday and we misconnected, I had to get Jim Miller on, and I'm happy to welcome him now. Go to Stickney and Hawthorne. And Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, sorry for missing you last week. Thanks for fitting me in today.
It's my pleasure. And there's actually a headline that came out after we were going to talk anyway, and that involves the way the spring dates are going to be trimmed, sort of, but not exactly, because you're going to stack some races, from 3 days down to two.
Yeah, and it really is. It's a trim, but for the right reasons. And the hardest thing that we found this year, Steve, is just with the change in the racing dynamic here in the Chicagoland area, with Arlington Park not racing this year, and the Hawthorne meeting moving a little bit later, we're still kind of trying to find our spot where we fit, where it's going to benefit horsemen the most for purses. It's going to benefit us for having our signal out to everyone and do what we can to really kind of drive the betting on that Hawthorne signal. So, yeah, the hardest thing that we've been trying to do is find, okay, where do we fit? Well, we're seeing later in the day, in the racing day, especially when we have a 2:50 first post central time, that as the day gets a little bit later, you see a lot of those eastern signals and central signals that do start to finish up. And you do see the handle rise quite a bit on our races at Hawthorne. So what we've decided to do is try to take the approach of, instead of having an 8-race card on a Friday or Saturday, let's turn that card into a 10 or 11, where you're going to get a little bit more of a focus on your races later in the day. You can generate some more handle and really find a way to really kind of help the signal instead of trying to hurt it by trying to fill some cards where you may have only a 5 or 6-horse field, and that really doesn't benefit anyone in the end.
It makes sense, and it also gives you a chance probably to build in another layer, additional multi-race sequence, an extra pick four perhaps, or
right,
or an extra pick five.
And we have seen that, and that's something that we're definitely looking to do. If we get to those 11-race cards, you'll start to see that mid-card pick four. You'll start to see those additional pick threes. Yesterday, for example, our pick five at the start of the day, 3 of the first 4 races, the longest price on the board, won. So we do have a pick five carryover into next Friday's card. And that's what you want to offer. I mean, the wagering public, they want to see larger fields. They want to see a good betting product that provides some value. And for us, now we have the potential, which we didn't really have in prior springs, of racing on the turf course. So to be able to utilize the turf course, you can start to grow that racing product a little bit more, try to make it a little bit more attractive to those horsemen in the Midwest, and try to draw some more horses into Hawthorne.
Jim, we only touched on the beginning of the meet, right ahead of the start. And one thing I know that you're and you just referenced it, the battle for horses, and
yep.
Quite to the credit of the Chicagoland horsemen that basically spent the winter. You allowed them to basically batten down and bed down through the winter, and they essentially were, keeping horses fit just by walking them on the shed row. And, now you're in a situation where, to be honest, Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana, are healthy as can be in terms of the purse structure, and horses that, even Illinois breds that would normally be home and Hawthorne and Arlington, even they're running out of town just because the open company purse money is just so good that it's you gotta run where the money is. How are you and the racing office trying to to build these cards, and what do you want to pass on to owners and trainers that could have them look hard at Hawthorne's condition book?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the battle for horses, especially in the Midwest at this time of year, is very tough. Like you mentioned, you have Canterbury Park opening next week, for example. Prairie Meadows just opened. Indiana Grand is racing right now. We're racing along with FanDuel down in Southern Illinois, and I think the biggest thing, that a difference that we have at Hawthorne this year that you haven't seen in the past, is we have been able to increase purses, and a lot of that is due to the fact that with Arlington Park not racing, the money that's generated from the OTB network in Illinois is coming to the purse structure over at Hawthorne. So last year, for example, a maiden allowance race went for $21,000. This year it's going for $40,000. The first level allowance has jumped from $23,000 to $42,000, and now you have the ability to run these races on turf and dirt. But what we've seen, Steve, is you're finding a lot of these races, and we had it, for example, yesterday. It was a maiden allowance race for a $40,000 pot with only six horses in the field. And I think a lot of people need to understand that we want to welcome everybody in, and we don't want to discourage anyone. And I think that's the biggest thing that we've heard from some horsemen, and we've heard from a lot of agents, is there are horsemen that are concerned. If they leave the jurisdiction that they're racing in to come race by us, they don't want to be subject to losing their stalls or subject to any type of, I don't even want to say a threat, but you know what? It is almost a threat, and that's a concern, and it's a concern within the industry. And for us, we would rather work with horsemen where if we don't have a race at Hawthorne that fits for a horseman stable down the grounds, we want those horsemen to be able to go somewhere so they can make some money, because that's the name of the game. And at the same time, in return, if there's a race that we can offer that somebody nearby doesn't, we want to welcome that horse in. And that's something that I think we really just need to work together, especially in the Midwest as an industry, but it's something that we offer where there is increased purses, there is the ability to race on turf and dirt, and we're hoping we can draw more horses in over the last month and a half of our meet.
Well, how has handle been? I mean, I saw that Sunday you handled 1.3 million.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty good weekend this weekend, and that's one thing that is definitely promising, is we are seeing the numbers improve, and a lot of that just has to do with watching the other signals around us and trying to place our races where we are kind of out on an island a little bit, instead of trying to run on top of your major signals, because we know we're not going to compete with a Gulfstream Park or New York or Southern California. So if we can get 7 or 8 minutes away from those races, then you can attract a little bit more attention to our signal. So handle is definitely headed in the right direction, and it helped that we were on the turf course for the first time this meet last weekend too. But now I think what you'll see is with these 10 race cards, with the ability to have turf races, and hopefully a little bit of a boost in field size too, you'll see handle continue to head in the right direction, and that's kind of what we're shooting for.
A couple of things too, and Hawthorne comes up so often, and you do as well. Jim Miller with us from Hawthorne. The contest, as a contest venue, you've cultivated a loyal following, and talk about your contest schedule for the remainder of 22.
Yeah, the contests really have been great at Hawthorne, and it's been the ability to work with the NTRA and to have the ability to offer so many seats for the NHC each and every year. And now we're starting to do it with a lot of other tracks as well. So our next set of contests comes up June 24th and 25th. And what we do is we do a live bankroll contest. So you get to keep what you make, even if you don't win in the contest. So for a $500 bankroll on the 24th or the 25th, you keep what you make. And then we're going to have a top five each of those days. And the top five will have the option of one of three NHC seats each of those days, a Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat or a Keeneland October seat. And that'll take place both of those days. And then, as always, our traditional Thanksgiving weekend contests are always fantastic. You're looking at 8 to 10, maybe even 12 seats for the NHC for that contest. And we offer it at any of our OTBs. So we have 16 OTB locations, and that's the thing, too. If they can't make it out to one certain location, but they have something that's a little bit closer, we want to be as accommodating as possible.
Well, and there's players from all over the country that make Hawthorne their, you know, their preferred, especially tour players that, you know, if they got to have the opportunity to play in an on-site, Hawthorne, one of the favorites. And Jim, one question that hasn't I haven't heard an update from recently. Where does construction stand on the casino and what's the timetable?
Well, the timetable is something that is the great unknown, but I would tell you that these things are starting to head back in the right direction, and that's the most important thing that we want to see for our Illinois horsemen and for racing at Hawthorne. And the thing that hurt us the most was the timing of the start of the pandemic, as things were just starting to get rolling at Hawthorne. Then the pandemic hit, and everything really kind of came to a standstill at that point. But now things are getting ready to start gearing up, in that, and I think you're going to see a lot of activity starting probably mid to late summer, and then they're just going to roll as quickly as they can.
So you think fall of 23 or early 24, is that
I would say practical? So. I would say that's practical. We definitely have our fingers crossed for that time frame as well. Everybody's waiting for it. You know that. We know that at Hawthorne, too. So we could keep our fingers crossed with that as a practical option.
And also, while I've got you, Jim, explain to everybody about the standard bred, how that's going to work, and the, you know, the alternating meet, essentially.
It is. That's a hard thing here in the Chicagoland area right now, because we are the only track for both thoroughbred racing and standard bred racing. So this year we're doing four track conversions, and we're the last track in the United States that does that track conversion. And it's to the tune of about $125,000, $150,000 every time we do it. So it's either removing the dirt surface or laying the dirt surface back down. But we have had to alternate for racing schedule between standard bred and thoroughbred racing. And it's something where we just want to do everything we can to try to keep both breeds going. Eventually down the line, there's definitely the hope that there will be another standard bred track in Illinois. And then you can expand dates for both the thoroughbred and the standard bred product. But this year, it's just going to be a kind of alternating schedule. We had a winter harness meet, spring thoroughbreds, we go summer harness, and then fall thoroughbreds again, and then we'll start preparing for 23.
Oh, all right, I'm glad we did this, and I wanted to make sure that we got a chance to update everybody, because I knew you wanted to get the word out a little bit and get in front of this revised schedule that is certainly worth everybody's attention, and the more expanded cards 2 days a week versus the three. So, Jim, I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you for having me on, Steve. And like I said, anybody, if they have any questions, they can find me on Twitter at Hawthorne Jim, or give me a call, and I'll happily answer what I can.
One of the most visible and most appreciated of the ubiquitous racetrack information types and marketing and all the different capacities, Jim, that it seems certain people, you know, kind of, you know, you, Jim Goodman, you know, there's certain people that just become, by nature of their personality, you know, just associated with a racetrack, and certainly that's the case with you for Hawthorne. Visit coming to talk a little Presque Isle and Todd Mostoller. And I would love to have been able to have Todd visit and to celebrate a win from last week, his filly and the try in the Derby City distaff, and wasn't to be. That's all right. There'll be other opportunities, right? That's doesn't mean she's not going to get a grade one, but we will get an update from I think from Todd, because you know, she actually was kind of a house, became kind of a, just one time, became kind of a house horse. we based on that, remember the original, what is it, what start was it of hers, that Brad Cox, I mean, just it was so glaring the way Brad was gushing when we asked him, and so we started tracking just one time, and she took a ton of money. In fact, here's Todd now, Todd Mostoller joining us. Todd, I'm just talking about last week, and I said we're going to talk about Presque Isle, but I wish I could have congratulated you here on a win, but that's all right. Plenty of opportunities for her as the season unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she, you know, she obviously in the Madison, she proved she was a quality horse to come back and run how she ran. Even in defeat, it just proved the quality that she had to go 3/5 of a second faster at the same distance that Jackie's Warrior did two races later. And to hang around for any piece of it, it was an impressive performance. So we'll look forward and hopefully have an opportunity to run against those horses again and prove that she belongs.
Well, she's a 4-year-old, so you got to look at the older filly and mare sprints. What do you foresee?
Well, there's not much really out there until the Ballerina.
Yeah.
You know, there's only one winning you're in prior to the Ballerina, and that's the Princess Rooney. And shipping to Florida in July is not exactly what you want to do, I don't believe. I mean, I haven't talked to Brad about that. We've kind of been on the Ballerina, and obviously if she wouldn't make that, there's a Presque Isle race called the Masters that has proven to be the best prep of any Breeders' Cup race in history. So that would certainly be an option, and that would have a lot of significance to me simply because of my involvement with Presque Isle Downs, and actually in conjunction with the racetrack at that time when we started, you know, came up with the concept for the Masters. So we'll see. We just got to take care of her and keep her fingers crossed, avoid the bad luck, and hopefully at the end of the year we get to participate.
Should ask you too. I mean, I started talking about the ownership, Commonwealth New Era Racing is the nom de course for Todd and the small group that he has, and was interested over Saturday at Belmont Dufresne's return, and that was a tough spot to come back.
Anytime those 3-year-olds are facing older horses. Unfortunately, in New York this time of year, you have to face those older horses, and you're at a disadvantage. I actually went down to Fair Hill on Saturday morning, saw her get on the van. She looks fabulous, which to me is the most important thing. But, you know, that first race back, we expected a little bit better, but we didn't get it. And as long as she comes out of the race in good shape, we'll live to fight another day. I think she has the potential to be a really nice horse, and she's grown up the right way. We'll look to keep moving forward.
Nice. And of course, Dufresne that broke the maiden at Saratoga, and it's funny that winner. I like that winner, and I was shocked that we got the price we did. Finest work. For George Weaver in the in that nightcap on Saturday. But that was there were a lot of horses in that field that if they ran an A race and you were giving away some experience. I mean, as it happens, the 1-2 finishers, they were last seen in December. But there were a bunch of others that had run, you know, the ones that were in between you and Finest Work, they all had recent races. So you were giving away, you know, a lot of recency.
Yeah. And you watch the head on a little bit. There's a lot of stuff that it started to rain then, and it was still considered a firm turf, but there was stuff flying back, and you know, those kind of horses that first experience, she'll benefit from it, and we'll move forward. But I think four out of the first five finishes were all four-year-olds in the race. I think there was only five four-year-olds, and I think they were four of the top five positions. So it speaks volumes as to, it's a little early in the year for three-year-olds to start taking on the elders, and they have a huge physical edge as well as, as you say, fitness edge based on their recency. So
we're
not discouraged.
No. And I know that scenario. In fact, we usually, it's probably a good topic for Hammer this week, because it's always been something that at this time of year I bring up about how racing offices decide, you know, when to merge the 3-year-olds with older. And at Oaklawn, frankly, at Oaklawn, they start doing it in February. I mean, it's like, wait a minute, this is a lot to ask, you know, to ask a horse that just turned three to be facing elders.
I think it has a lot to do, obviously, with, with the foal crops down considerably.
Sure.
From 40,000 to where they are. I mean, I understand they're trying to fill races, but, it's not the best scenario for those younger horses, and they're definitely at an extreme disadvantage, so. I mean, the really good ones overcome it, but we all don't have really good ones for those spots.
There you go. Right? That's well put. Well, a couple of things to discuss, actually, with Todd, and let's dive in, because Presque Isle, I did mention leading into Derby, Todd, and I know, I think you were driving, maybe. I don't know if you heard it when I brought it up, but, you know, had heard from a couple of listeners in the Erie area that, you know, they were concerned leading up to Derby about the fact that they weren't going to be able to bet on Churchill at Presque. And part of that also included just getting the regular contract in place for Presque Isle to open the season at all. And clearly things came together pretty quickly in the last 10 days.
Yeah, the Monday after the Derby, we resolved our differences and moved forward, and we're looking forward to our first full meet of 100 days in 3 years. Obviously, COVID had a huge impact on everybody, but up there we ran truncated meets the last 2 years, so we couldn't be happier that we had an immediate 12% purse increase over the condition book that was put out, and we had 100 days of racing. It starts Monday, and we couldn't be more excited about getting it started. We have new post time this year, earlier, going to be day racing. There's some thought that may help us from a parimutuel revenue standpoint. So we'll see if that comes to fruition, but we're excited about getting started, and today's the day.
Well, and I'm glad you brought the start time up, because the 5:30 had been, from the beginning of the track, from its origin, in fact, it had been kind of staked out as an alternate time slot to kind of catch the end of the East Coast action and potentially, you know, the West Coast, people starting to tune in, you know, late afternoons. And it seemed like, you know, a successful concept. Talk about how you foresee the condition book. I mean, you got 8 races today, 8 races tomorrow. I mean, how do you expect the calendar to unfold? Talk about the days you're going to race as well.
Well, I mean, with day racing, we're kind of an uncharted territory, and it has created a slight hurdle for people that were shipping, because in the Mid-Atlantic it was always nice that you could leave early in the morning from Fairhill, Penn National, Parks, you know, Maryland, and you could get there in time for Lasix, and then run your horse, stay the night, and wake up in the morning and be on the road. A little bit different dynamic this year, and it appears as though most people are making an adjustment by shipping in the day before, and now you'll be able to get out at, you know, you'll be able to leave there at 5 o'clock, and you'll probably be home around midnight for most of those places in the Mid-Atlantic. So it's it'll be interesting to see how it does affect the shippers, and that's something that you know, at this point we don't know. We'll have to watch that. That was one of my concerns when Churchill proposed the earlier post time, and you know, we'll see. We were willing to experiment and see how it goes, and we'll see and make adjustments accordingly.
So. 3 days this week, and then the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday schedule gets underway next week.
That's correct. And it'll be interesting to see, too. The other thing I'm interested to see is how many Chicago horsemen that participated in Arlington and what those entries look like for those horses that are deemed to be you know, Tapeta horses. It'll just be interesting to see. It's uncharted territory, but we're hopeful that horsemen will respond. They have in the past, and hopefully we have a good betting product. We do know that we're going to have a safe racetrack. As you know, Steve, Presque Isle is annually the safest racetrack in North America.
Yeah,
it's just been an incredible surface as the horsemen. We participated in installing that and paying for it in 2007, and we couldn't be happier with the decision that we made to do that. It's just been a fantastic surface, and it has been horses come off of that, and they run well if they're running on synthetic or even dirt, you know, and that's what's really been a prelude as far as the Masters being a Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint. I mean, the list of horses that have competed in that Masters and went on to win the filly and mare sprint is pretty remarkable, quite frankly. So,
well, and speaking of the stakes schedule, we'll get a first stake next Monday with the Tom Ridge. Looks basically like the schedule. It's the same standard schedule. I don't see anything new, do I?
No, it's pretty much the same standard schedule. The purses, obviously last year and the year before, we had to truncate those purses because of the COVID, you know, hurting revenues, but they're back to their normal purse structure standpoint. The entire stake schedule is back to normal, and it's going to be hopefully an exciting year. It will be different watching in the afternoon, though. So I'm looking forward to actually turning on a TV this afternoon and watching those races.
1:30 post, basically Monday through Thursday. Today, this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but then the four-day schedule starts to unfold at that point. Presque Isle Downs, PID, back on the betting menu, and I'm just looking through the wagering choices. Pick five starts in race one, and then the late pick four. There's also a second pick five, actually, that comprises the last five of the day as well. So an early and a late pick five, and two pick four.
Request for it, so we brought Dick back this year, and hopefully we have an extremely successful year. We're planning on having a successful year, and hopefully the changes that we've made create the revenues that we are hopeful that they will.
Nice. Todd Mostolder with us, and while I've got you, I do want to ask about, because we've been running that ad about the Penn National and about the stakes coming up.
Yeah, the Penn Mile and the Penn Oaks. Yeah, I actually heard the advertisement when I was driving home to participate in this call, and I guess when did NOMS close? I think it might close tomorrow, Wednesday. I forget. You have it on the commercial, but the date escapes me. But I think it's this week. The NOMS close, and the Penn Mile on itself, it's become a really good race. we had the unfortunate weather the last couple of years and had to come off the grass.
That's right.
That's the one thing with turf racing, especially when you get the deluge like we got last year. It's, you know, you can make all those plans, and then unfortunately the weather doesn't cooperate. It it leaves a sour taste in your mouth for sure. But hopeful that's not going to happen this year, and we get a quality field of horses for both races, and we have we'll have additional stakes on that day too. I think we have a couple PA bred stake races, and then we also have some match series races that we're going to put on those days also. So it'll be
excellent,
a really nice card. Hopefully, big betting fields and a quality weather day, which is the most important.
Exactly. That you can't control. Well, they're going to throw the switch at 1:30 today. Presque Isle Downs, conveniently located right off of I-90. For those of you that, like me, who go back and forth from upstate New York to Louisville pretty regularly. So I appreciate this, Todd. Best of luck to everybody for a safe, and safe is the operative word up at Presque. It's been remarkable, and that's been a steady, really one of the really defining elements of the racetrack since its inception with the Tapita. And good luck to everybody. I appreciate the visit.
Yep, if we can make it through last year's meet, we did not have one knock on wood, one catastrophic breakdown, and
wow,
that's our goal every meet. But it was pretty remarkable to accomplish it. So we're hopeful to do the same thing this year, and we're doing everything we can to ensure the safety of our equine athletes.
Well, that's a tremendous. Now that you say that, I did remember at the end of last year that came out in like a year-end press release. The thing that's most notable, and one of the best advertisements, is how the Presque runners at whatever level they operate, when they spin down to Keeneland and succeed against Keeneland horses in the fall, that also speaks volumes.
Oh, absolutely, and it was even more so. I mean, we do it on the dirt and the turf now, but when Keeneland was a synthetic surface, it was even more pronounced. Yeah, there's been there's a lot of boxcars. You got to follow those horses when they leave Presque Isle Downs and go to Keeneland because they are often overlooked. And there was actually one of the biggest days of fortunately of my career was I had when Terrace ran down there. There was three horses in the late pick four that all ran at Presque Isle in their last start, and I can't remember what it paid, but there was a horse that paid $50, she paid $16, and there was another horse that paid like $70, all part of the pick four. If I would have followed my own advice, I'd have walked out of there with bucket loads.
I love it. I should mention, I'm just looking, and actually I'll bring it up with Dick on, you know, when Dick visits on Wednesdays, we'll get a Presque Isle play of the day from Dick when he visits, because he tracks, you know, all the stats and everything else. But I'll have him fold that into his Wednesday visits. I'm just looking at the jockey colony and the, you know, the trainers. It's a lot of the Tampa. For those of you that are Tampa fans, you follow this group up to Presque Isle every summer, essentially.
Yeah, well, Gallardo's back. I know Pablo Morales is back. And then we did have, at least in the first couple cars, I don't know if he's planning on doing double duty down from Woodbine, but Kamari, is that
Cass Kamari,
the Japanese rider?
Yes, yeah, he's terrific.
Yes. He can really ride. So, yeah, we're excited about, at least he's on the first couple cars. I hope he makes a decision to ride both places, because it does work out that you can do that based on their race days. Gallardo did it for the last couple months last year. So it works out, and it would be great to have a rider of his caliber can do that. I guess he just won the grade three for Trombetta up there this weekend, I believe, didn't he? With Arzak?
Yeah.
Wasn't he on Arzak? Yeah.
Yesterday.
No, he can really ride. He rode another one of my horses at Turfway when he was riding there, and I think he's going to be a great addition to the jockey colony if he makes the choice to do that.
Well, of course, the most important rider that returns to Presque Isle this summer, my man, Willie Martinez.
He's back again? I thought he would be, but who knows? You just never know with Willie. Yep, Willie on the front
he
end.
He is. You bet. You put him on the engine and hold on tight. He's edging closer to retiring, but he says he feels good. I saw him in New Orleans this winter, and he's one of my favorites. He does have an off season business that you know he's ready to more or less move into full time. But he said, "I think I'm coming back for another year." So, Willie Martinez.
He's always in a good mood. He's a great ambassador.
Oh, he's great.
You love meeting those people and talking to those people that have that positive attitude about them. It's just infectious, and he's one of them.
Oh, he's the greatest. I appreciate this. This was fun. Todd Mostoller, everybody, and Presque Isle Downs back now starting today, 1:30, and Monday through Thursdays. Tune in and get down. We'll get some dick pushes during the week as well. Let's stay here. We've got about 20 minutes plus, and we've got quite a bit yet to do. Well, at least Grand Motion to visit. And I had a little concept that may or may not come off to close out the show. And as we wait, I guess I'll tip my hand a little bit as we wait for Graham. But I always enjoy the specific anniversaries on the date. And May 16th, in Preakness history, the most recent May 16th, how about American Pharoah's Preakness win came on this date. And so did Rachel's win in 2009. Real quiet in 98, so 24 years ago. Pine Bluff, 30 years ago today, Pine Bluff wins the Preakness. And 35 years ago, I've got a couple of pictures in my Preakness collection that I can slap up. Ali Sheba on this date in 87. So 35 years ago today. Pleasant Colony won his Preakness in 81 on this date. Master Derby in 1970. Northern Dancer in 64. Then a few, one that's a little obscure, actually, Royal Orbit. I don't know a lot about Royal Orbit, actually. In 59. Yeah. And Bold Venture in 36. In fact, Bold Venture, interesting, because he did not get a chance to close out a Triple Crown, right? Just the two starts, and then he's one of, I think he's one of, how many? There's, boy, I used to know all these things absolutely top of my head. We'll get the details. I think we got Graham Motion standing by, though.
Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Graham.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good. Just a few minutes, because I know you're short. I absolutely had to reach out and discuss Saturday's Grade 1. And like you, I was also surprised that Trevor McCarthy hadn't won a Grade 1.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was just something I hadn't really thought about, to be honest.
Yeah.
What a cool thing to have him win on one of my horses. I mean, that was a real kind of a privilege, and I'm thrilled for him.
Talk about this horse, because from what I understand, Trevor himself, after riding him, the first North American start, he said that he thought this was a good horse and that he was going to be very effective on the stretch out, and that's exactly how it played out.
Yeah, but I'd also like to remind him of what he said the first time I mentioned this race to him. So, anyway.
What did he say? What did he say?
I think he was a little surprised. but listen, I think when you go back and look at this horse's form in Europe, I don't think he was that far below Yabir, the favorite, the Breeders' Cup winner. You know, I think in Europe, Yabir is not considered to be sort of a grade one horse. And I think realistically, my horse was not that far behind him. He did have throat surgery in England before he came to me, which I would imagine has helped him. But did I know he was this kind of horse? Absolutely not.
This was also notable because he came out of the allowance try where you had him on Lasix, but then, of course, he came off of it for the graded stake.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not necessarily sure he really needs it. I don't think either one of my horses particularly needed it. That wasn't a concern to me. More of my concern with this horse, he's quite tough in the morning. He's tough to gallop. He's quite a nervous horse, so I'd like to think probably being at Fairhill where he gets turned out every day has helped him. But it's very classy in the afternoon. I mean, he never turned a hair at Belmont on Saturday and was a real class act. And he is a Royal Ascot winner, you know?
Well, oh boy, does that mean he's on the list of for a plane trip or not?
No, it was mentioned to me when we've discussed races for him, but I think, you know, we're going to keep him here for an American campaign and point him for the Manhattan for now. That's the plan.
Very nice. Well, and he'd be, you know, you would think, what, the United Nations, and, you know, there's certainly a nice list of opportunities for a horse like this, and you have to be, you know, sometimes when I give you the buyer, you hadn't heard it, but he got a 105 buyer.
Yeah, no, I did see that, which is encouraging.
Puts him squarely in nice company. This will be a nice addition to the distance turf community. How was the grass by at that point? The rain had started like maybe within an hour, so it really hadn't necessarily gotten to it.
Yeah, I don't think it was too bad. You know, Trevor said it had a little cut in it, but I don't think it was too bad.
Nice. Well, this is a terrific win, and you know, especially I know you're not a big bettor. You've been known occasionally maybe to slip a tenner.
Certainly to have a flutter.
Exactly. But 19-1 was a silly price on him in this spot.
Well, it was when you put in comparison that my other horse was a shorter price than he was, whereas
right.
This horse's form was actually better. But look, that's the jockey factor. You know, you've got Flavian, who's one of the hottest jockeys in the country. There's no doubt that changes things.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, should also ask about the other horse. What did you learn about Easter in this?
Yeah, I thought he ran a respectable race. I'm not sure he needs to go a mile and 3/8. He's very impressive in the morning. I really like this horse. I think perhaps we ended up playing the same game as the favorites, as Yabir and Gufo, whereas, you know, Flavian gave him a beautiful patient ride, but kind of got caught up in playing the same strategy as the favorites, which we probably weren't going to beat them doing that. You know, he waited very patiently for a nice rail trip, but he just couldn't quicken with those horses. I think he's a really nice horse. I think he's going to be very competitive in a first-level allowance race next time out and going a mile and 1/8 or a mile and a quarter.
Let me also ask about a couple different things in just the last few weeks. Let's go back to the weekend at Churchill. Some thoughts about...
I mean, I've only heard comments about it. I wasn't really aware of it because when we ran on it, you know, it was a relatively fresh course. I realize it's certainly going to have its idiosyncrasies, and it's one of those turf courses that's obviously going to drain fast and quickly. But no, I wasn't aware completely of what's going on, except somebody brought it to my attention this morning that it's been a tricky turf course.
Yeah, the early read is that there's some nuance or some quirks to it. So we'll follow that story. Let me ask about a couple of yours that people have already latched onto, Graham. Spenderella, who just has captured everybody's imagination. What's the schedule for her?
Yeah, so she is going to go to England if she continues to train well. I mean, there really isn't a lot for her. She's already won a Grade 2 and a Grade 3, I believe. She hasn't done much wrong. She really seems suited to a mile. So we're going to take a shot and take it to the Coronation. I think she fits the mold.
Wow. Wow. Does Anthony Beck, does he have a morning suit?
I think he'll find one for the occasion. You know, it was a shame when we took sharing, nobody could go. So we none of those guys, which obviously, you know, part of the experience.
Sure.
Part of it is actually going and being able to enjoy the experience, which is tremendous. And, you know, no one was able to do that with sharing, which was a shame because of COVID. But, you know, I think this filly really belongs. She sure hasn't done much wrong.
Well, you've got your tailors. You'll take them to Savile Row and you'll set them right up.
Yeah, I actually bought a suit, so I'm just going to persist with this. Keep following taking lessons from Wesley.
Exactly. I love it. Let me ask you about, before we ask about the weekend and your Black-Eyed Susan starters, what about True Velour, who won the King Leatherberry a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, so we'll take him to the sprint race on Belmont weekend, which is possibly the Jiper. Is that what that is?
The Jiper, yeah.
The seven furlong grade one. Take a shot with him. Now, this horse was really unlucky. He finished second in a grade two in California, and the winner was disqualified, and California is probably the only state in this country. The winner was not disqualified. The winner tested positive and was not disqualified. And in any other state in the country, I think the winner would have been taken down, but not in California, which shows the lunacy of our rules in this country. So I feel like he got a little jilted out of winning a grade two before he got injured. But, man, he was impressive the other day, the way he did it.
Yeah. Very much. That was in the King, and nice. Well, I've got to ask you. We'll talk about the Black-Eyed Susan last, because I happen to have in front of me the Belmont. I got a horse that we got to talk about, because Mrs. Postman, that's going to go Friday at Belmont in the first. This is a second timer. The Pioneer of the Nile filly for Len Reggio. It's a homebred out of the wonderful Alan Jerkins stake mare, Miss Shop, that makes her a half to Tintype Gal, who I'm sure you trained.
Yeah, I did. And, I mean, this filly was entered in the Breeders' Cup, Tintype Gal, and the night that she was leaving to get on the airplane, she walked out of the stall lame and was scratched. Which was so disappointing, because I thought she was a legitimate Breeders' Cup filly. This filly hasn't shown as much. I really do feel this is what she wants to do. If she's good enough, you know, we'll find out on Thursday, but I definitely think she wants to go a distance at ground.
Nice. This is the opener on Friday, and it looks like a nice
Friday.
Belmont. Yeah, Friday, and actually, I get that back, Thursday. I'm sorry. You're right, Thursday. The 19th.
See that? I questioned myself.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, what you've got to like is that the two that finished 1-2 in that maiden race from Laurel, they both have come back to win, Graham. I don't know if you realize that.
I didn't know that. That's why I'm not a good handicapper.
I'm blushing and charmed way. Both have come back and won out of that Laurel race. And, of course, Trevor McCarthy gets aboard. The 7-pound bug rode Mrs. Postman in her debut. This is a nice family, and I'm sure Len, this is a, you know, all any of his fillies are looking to, you know, make hay and come back around when the time's right for, you know, for the Broodmare band. That gets us to the last topic. And Graham, Candy Light and Divine Huntress are both they both have been entered. They're going to draw today, 4:00. And the Black-Eyed Susan, some thoughts about what looks like a really fun group of 13.
I mean, look, I feel like we got a little off track with Divine Huntress when we went to New Orleans. There was an incident in front of her where she almost had to be eased for a few strides, and she never really got going again. Came back, and I thought she ran a respectable race at Aqueduct. And Pimlico was where she trained, you know, before we privately purchased her, so she's very familiar with the track. I think she's doing well. I think that the race in New York will really benefit her stamina. and we want to take a shot in here.
And?
Yes, and the other filly is coming off a second to what's obviously the best filly in Maryland, the Hammy's filly,
yeah.
Candy Light. And I, you know, again, I've kind of had this race in mind since we finished second that day. There's not a lot of her. She's quite aggressive in the morning. I didn't want to run her back. I just thought I'd wait for this race, and if she was doing well, we'd take a shot. So that's why we're there.
Very nice. Are you coming to the draw, or are you going to let him do it without you?
I'm not, to be honest. I didn't really know much about it, so I'm glad you've enlightened me to what's going on, because I noticed it wasn't on the overnight, so now I know.
4 o'clock, and then they'll... that's funny. Well, Graham, I appreciate this. As always, another grade one to your outstanding resume. I suppose that at some point we'll be able to say Hall of Fame resume. Not quite yet, but is that one of the reasons you felt obliged to win another grade one, to kind of stick it in the eye?
No, look, I'm flattered to be considered for it. You know, winning grade ones is very cool, but to win like these old races like the Man of War, those are,
sure,
you know, old races that are really have some history, and I feel, you know, it is great to add to your resume. And it, you know, I haven't won it, I don't think, since Bettertalk Now won it, and he was one of the reasons I've had all the success I've had. And so, you know, I'm partial to races like that for sure. Tough to win, though. Tough to win these races.
Well, you got yourself somebody new on the shed row, that relatively new, the two North American starts, and you also provided Trevor McCarthy with a memorable moment as well for his first grade one. We'll catch up with Trevor at some point and talk about it, because it was a big deal. Graham, I will see you the end of the week. We'll see you here at Old Hilltop.
In person. Look forward to it, Steve.
Thanks so much. Graham Motion, everybody, and the grade one winning Highland Chief, a Glen Eagles. And actually, you know, what was fun about, maybe I'll bring this up with Sid on Wednesday, a few of the winners over the weekend that, some were expected, obviously, like that Rogier for Chad. But Rogier, for instance, is by Territories. And Glen Eagles has come up with Sid over the years, the Highland Chief. But Neige Blanche by Anadin. Twilight Gleamings, you know, wins again. National Defense is the sire. So some interesting offbeat European stallions that all Irish, actually, right? I think, National Defense is great. It's got the Great Britain moniker as opposed to Ireland. But Glen Eagles Irish, Territories Irish, and Anadin, all Irish. Interesting. All right, just a couple of minutes. I was hoping to slip in something fun, but I guess we'll save it. But I'll tell you what we are going to do, since it is the anniversary of 35th anniversary today, Preakness Day, of Ali Sheba's Preakness. Let's, and I'm going to see what, not sure what we've got here in terms of the audio, but let's listen in.
They're off and running in the Preakness. Between horses, looking for the big one, gets the early lead. Harriman along the inside, coming on now, going head and head for that lead. No More Flowers now racing third. Down along the inside, Bet Twice in fourth place. Then it's Phantom Jet, Ali Sheba on the outside, coming on Evie's Copy, Gulch, and Crypto Clearance is the early trailer. They swing into the clubhouse turn. It's Harriman down along the rail with a slight lead. Moving up on the outside, it's looking for the big one. They're still in a speed duel into the backstretch. Bet Twice, two lengths back at the rail. On the outside, No More Flowers. Coming on, it's Phantom Jet. Ali Sheba up on the outside with Gulch now making a move. Crypto Clearance along the inside coming on. And AV's Copy. They're midway down the backstretch. Harriman still has the lead by a neck. Looking for the big one on the outside. Stays right with the leader. The outside bet twice. No More Flowers. Crypto Clearance has room along the rail. Comes on. Way on the outside. Ali Sheba. Then it's Gulch. They're into the far turn, looking for the big one, comes on, now takes the lead, but up on the outside, it's Bet Twice coming on to go to the front. On the outside, Gulch coming on, along with Ali Sheba. They race to the top of the stretch, Bet Twice showing the way, Ali Sheba up on the outside with Gulch right there. They race through the lane, it's Ali Sheba, Bet Twice at the rail, Gulch on the outside. They race down to the eighth pole, and it's Ali Sheba on the outside. Along the inside, Bet Twice. They race to the 16th pole. Ali Sheba on the outside. Bet Twice at the rail. It's Ali Sheba winning the Preakness.
There. If you haven't seen it, I'll put up the video, and I'm going to put up a great picture, too, of Jack Van Berg. One of our favorites, obviously. And for those of you that followed on to Belmont, it would be Bet Twice's day. But on this day, 2-1, $6 winner, Ali Sheba, Bet Twice, Crypto Clearance, Gulch settled for fourth. There you go. We'll do one of those every day. 3 hours went by in a blink. Want to thank Graham Motion and Todd Mostoller, Jim Miller, Johnny D, back where he belongs. And we'll have Mig back tomorrow at 10. And Rudy Brissett kicked us all off. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody, as Monday schedules start to get a little fuller for those that, you got Prairie Meadows and Presque and Parks, of course, and Mountaineer later and Louisiana Downs. Finger Lakes, though it's kind of rainy upstate, and Horseshoe Indianapolis. Thanks, everybody. Always fun to come back to Baltimore, back to Pimlico. Talk to you tomorrow. Replay 6 to 9 in the morning and archive podcast soon. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full